From the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanti Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and you are listening to Love to Love. During Swami's birthday celebrations, I had caught up with an internationally known singer and songwriter, Miss Dana Gillespie, and on the 28th of November, we played the first part of the conversation, where we spoke about many things and especially about her new album, Planet Love, which is a mixture of some of her much sought-after melodies and some new tracks. And today, we are playing the second part of the conversation and we'll be listening to more songs from this new album. Now, as a word of introduction, Ms. Dana Gillespie has emerged as an ambassador for Swami's message around the world through her music. This British singer-songwriter has been performing in the divine presence of Bhagwan for the past 16 years. Her first performance in Prashanti Nilayam was at the time of Baba's 70th birthday. She now has 46 years of music background with over 61 albums to her credit. So dear listeners, come and join us for the second and the final part of this conversation. Sai Ram Dana, and welcome once again to the studios of Radio Sai.
Sai Ram Chandu, happy to be here, and hello listeners everywhere. You're going to sit back and you're going to have some, hopefully some very good music.
Today morning, I was taking a look at your website, and there was this small little tab called Mystique up there. And then it apparently looks like Mystique misspelled, but then when I clicked on it, I realized that it is a place in Caribbean.
It is actually Mystique. Technically means mosquitoes in some local language, because there are quite a lot of mosquitoes. Okay. People like to think it's mystique and mystical. It's a tiny, tiny island in the West Indies, not far from Barbados. And 19 years ago, a friend of mine who has one of the most famous bars in the world called Basil's Bar, his name is, of course, Basil, he and I were sitting talking, and I said, you know, why don't you start a blues festival? I'm a blues singer. If you get a piano in this place, I will find musicians to come and play for free, because, as I said, it's now a charity festival, and the thing is to raise money for the next island, which is called St. Vincent. I said to him, if you go and find a piano, I'll get the musicians. And God bless him, 3 weeks later he leapt on a plane, went to New York, bought a white upright piano, and thus the Blues Festival was born and started. And Mystique is actually a very famous island, because 30 years ago the sister of our Queen, Princess Margaret, she used to go there. Mick Jagger has a house, Brian Adams has a house there, various other luminaries, I can't even remember them actually. So it's in its 19th year, and every year my job is to actually get the musicians organized, get them flown over there, and then for 15 days there's full-on blues music from 8 o'clock at night till 1 or 2 in the morning. And as I said, all the money goes to the charity to help children on the island of St. Vincent, which is a very poor island compared to Mystique, which is a millionaire's island, and so that they can go to school. They get scholarships and things to go to school. So it's a good thing, but it's a very good example of how music can be put to doing some good,
yeah,
which is what I like. And I mean, I don't get to sing bhajans there. They all know I'm crazy and go off to India, but it actually doesn't really arise while I'm running the Blues Festival. It's strictly blues, 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 all night, every night, and not one jazz note is allowed there, only blues. Because jazz is, I think I told you, it's a bit
more complicated.
Complicated and too intellectual. Blues is very simple, and blues is very spiritual too.
What inspired you to start this blues festival for charity?
Well, it's my friend Basil, whose name is Basil Charles. He doesn't sing, but he's the only man I know who's on the cover every year of the CD. I record everything every night, and then I pick the best tracks and mix them and put it into an album. And the sale of this album is also one way of raising money. But Basil Charles I've known for 35 years, and because so many famous people go to this island, he was even invited to our royal wedding when Prince William and Catherine Kate got married. Mm-hmm. And quite a few people from Mystique went there, because the prince and his lovely wife have been and danced while our blues festival is going on. And it's he comes from this poor island next door, and he just wanted to give something back, because he's done extremely well. Everyone knows about Basil's Bar and his charity, which is called the Basil Charles Education Foundation, even earned him an OBE from the Queen, which is great to be, you know, honoured that way.
What is an OBE?
It stands for Order of the British Empire.
Okay.
You know, you
okay.
have, you can either be, you know, the Queen, I think you have to get down on your knees and she puts a sword
like
on
a knighthood?
A knighthood, yes. And there's different levels. I think if you become Sir something or other, that's quite high up. And then the next one down is an OB, and then MBE means something else. I don't know. I haven't sadly got an OBE,
okay.
but he has. And so, but it's his charity. It's his baby. All I really have to do is find the musicians, get them on and off stage every night. I sing a bit myself, but I'm comparing, and I'm running all the record. You know, I have an engineer with me who's actually doing the technical things, you know, because the speakers can blow up and things. I don't know how to repair that. But I do know how to mix in studios. Again, I work with a great engineer. So that albums are quite good, and I can now say I've produced two tracks with Mick Jagger of the Rolling Stones.
Because
he's sung there, you know, which is good. And it's all for a good cause. But maybe we should get back to playing some songs from
sure.
Planet Love.
Yeah.
I know that we're going through the album sort of slowly, and I think I see on our list the next song is Dream On. And this came from one of the albums when I call myself Third Man for 3 CDs, and I'm looking at the listings here. I've got two guitarists playing on this track, and one was my blues guitarist Ed Dean, but the other one is that second guitarist from Pink Floyd that I told you about. And I kind of wrote that because I feel that sometimes we are in a dream. I mean, Swami himself has said it is a kind of dream that we're in, and it's hard to know which is the waking dream and which is the sleeping dream. And one has to be aware that maybe everything's a dream, probably even this track.
Let us begin today's session with the song Dream On from the album Planet Love by Dana Gillespie.
There is no east or west, there's only here. There is no aching heart without a tear. Make me a perfect picture to hang in the hall of eternal light. Oh, the dream within a dream keeps burning bright. There is no water where there's only how. There is no reason why. Thank you.
Welcome back, dear listeners. The song that you just heard was Dream On by Dana Gillespie from her new album, Planet Love.
Before you go any further, Chandra, yes. Can I just say that actually the Planet Love album is a compilation album plus new songs. So this technically, the song came off the album, which was called Dream On, when I called myself Third Man. So really it's the Third Man musicians, but it's having a little bit of a revival. I kind of repackaged things and added some new songs, okay. Just so people might know.
Okay, sure. So we were talking about the Mystique Blues Festival. Now, recently after Swami's Mahasamadhi, you also had a Love the Love tribute to Sai Baba concert, free concert in US.
Yes.
So how did that come about?
Well, I've done quite a few of them. I never know how these come about. If somebody's mad enough to organize it, they do, and well, they contact me. Actually, came about, the first one happened in San Diego because wonderful Dr. Sam Sandweiss, and anyone who hasn't read his Holy Man and the Psychiatrist book should. He and his wife Sharon are a joy to stay with, 50 years, I think, plus married, and so happy together. And so I've been over there three times, I think, now, and stayed with them, and they were the ones that started putting this on, and I've sung now in quite a few universities, San Diego, Colorado, something called Rutgers University, which is in New Jersey, and they started calling it Love the Love, and we're not playing the track Love the Love because it's not on the Planet yeah. Love, it's a CD on its own, but that song did come about because I, you know, it's all very well, people sit here and they go, we love you, Sai Baba, and one should be loving everyone else as well. But we forget that we have his planet to walk on, and if we don't love his planet, then we've missed the whole point of his teachings. And the planet means not just our fellow man, it means definitely we've got to love our enemies, which is quite difficult for a lot of people, but we've got to love fishes, birds, mountains, every single thing, every atom belongs to him. So that was really the theme of the concerts, and I don't actually organize anything. All I do is sing, and when I get there, they've organized musicians who've learnt the songs, or I'll do it with backing tracks, depending on the size of the venue. Sometimes it's been very big, and they put out CDs, DVDs, I should say, of this. But actually, I never look at any DVDs of stuff I do, because if I look at it, I'll only think, good heavens, my shirt was too tight, or I'm bulging out of my trousers, or the makeup looks strange, or the lighting looks worse. I only like to think about the music. But it's great that it's happened in California, because I feel very strongly that Swami's message has to go all over the world. You know, you're so lucky, all of you that live here in Puttaparthi, you've seen him, you've experienced him, you know, you've worked alongside, etc. But there are many, many people in the world who still believe in Swami and they've never seen him. And I feel my hat goes off to them, you know, well done. I personally needed to be what we say in the Bible, a doubting Thomas, because I needed to see with my own eyes 35 years ago, and I'm pleased I did. But I like going out and singing to people who maybe will never get a chance to physically see him, but his message is so strong that it's great to see that they're responding all over the world. And the reason I was late to come here in the studios by okay. only 5 minutes, because, you know, I'm British and we have strict timings, it's because I was in the middle of a meeting trying to work out when I go to Kazakhstan and Siberia next year, where they love to listen to everything to do with Swami.
So in the Love concert, who were your audience? Were they mainly Sai devotees, or you had a mixed audience?
Actually, it was a mixed audience. In the universities, it was maybe half Sai devotees and half students. Now, perhaps I could say the students came along because they didn't know what else to do that afternoon. I don't think that was always the case, but I think sometimes people float in for no reason at all. I mean, I was in Poland this year, and I was standing at the back while the choir was singing the bit before me, and a woman opened the door. She didn't know where she was going to, and it was completely full, but there was one chair. Well, I had been sitting on it, but I knew I was about to sing. And I said to her, are you looking for somebody? She said, I think she was probably looking for the ladies' room or something. I said, come and sit here. At the end of the concert, she said, this is incredible. She completely flipped out. So it can touch people, this musical thing. And I often tell the story of a man who was standing writing down Swami's thought for the day, and he started, a woman, an Indian friend of mine, started talking to him, and she said to him, is this your first time here? And he said, yes, I've never been before. And she said, what brought you here? And he said, well, I heard a bit of music on Norwegian radio, and I was so intrigued I wanted to come here. And she said, well, what piece of music is this? And she's my absolute best friend in the world. And he said, oh, well, you'll never have heard of her. It's some singer called Dana Gillespie, and she falls about laughing. But it was because of the music that made him then inquire who, what, where Sai Baba is, as if any one of us can ever really know. But at least one step in the right direction. That's the power of music and of his love.
So how was the audience reaction in the US compared to the audience that you sing to in Russian-speaking countries? How do they compare?
They're, in a way, more reserved in America. In Kazakhstan or Russia, usually by the end of the performance or three-quarters way through, they're up and dancing in the aisles, whereas Americans sit there. There might be a couple of sort of flipped-out types that will be dancing at the back. It's a little bit more difficult to get them motivated, whereas the Russians are full-on, big-hearted, and just want to leap about with joy. Actually, they're probably so happy that anyone goes to these places that they're just a joy to sing for. Americans are probably more worried about what their neighbours sitting next door to them are going to think. I don't think the Russians care a hoot. But in the end, it all just boils down to love, and everyone, you know, responds really quickly. And what I've noticed is that it doesn't matter what you do. There are so many paths to God, if one could say that, that different people respond differently everywhere, yes. Which does bring us into the next track, which is called Different Strokes. And, you know, because I travel so much, this song is called There's Different Strokes for Different Folks, and it's because I've seen that it doesn't matter. We don't all have to be walking in the same speed. You know, a tortoise won't go the same as a hare.
Yeah.
But all are heading for the same goal. Sai Baba has said this many times, so that's why I thought I'd kind of put this song together. So should we give it a listen?
Sure, yes. Welcome back, dear listeners. You just listened to the song Different Strokes by Dana Gillespie from her new album, Planet Love. So, Dana, now, let us talk a little bit about how you go about recording an album, right from stage one to the last stage.
Well, I always jokingly say that it takes 9 months to make an album the same length for a woman to have a baby, but I've always made albums instead. And
For the musician, her album is her baby, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's actually, once the sort of baby is born, the CD that is, you don't know whether it's going to fall flat on its face or walk, or even better, run joyously to many people's homes and hearts. With me, usually, it starts, in my case, it starts with the song. Once the song is written, or I've done a collaboration of having a backing track with somebody, and then I write the melody and the words, then it's a question. It takes weeks and weeks and weeks of going into the studios with somebody or with some musicians to build it up, to build up these songs, because I might leave a bit of the song or the layout, general layout, with a very minimalistic groove, drums, and then I leave it with the musicians to get it to the next stage. Then I go off on the road and do my blues singing thing. Then I come back and we work together to get it to sort of the next stage. Once the backing tracks are done, and each song might have many different sort of things put in on, usually the last thing that goes on before the voice is the what you call the overdubs, and that's usually maybe a saxophone thing or a lead guitar will go on last, and then the penultimate thing will be the backing vocals, or it could be tabla or percussion. And quite often on many of my tracks I've used a wonderful percussionist who's played here with me in Puttaparthi called Pandit Dinesh.
Yeah.
And he's the nephew of a very famous Indian singer called Pandit Jasraj, and he's performed all over the world. He's fabulous. And once he's put what we in the music business call the fairy dust, the sprinkling of fairy dust, then when everything's on, then I can go in and put my voice on. And I tend to do one or two, maximum three takes of a song, and then I choose whichever one is the best. And then once all the recordings are done, then you have to do the mixing, mm-hmm. which is for people who are not familiar with how you make a record. You're sitting there with all your tracks for one song, and each thing has to leveling together, so that while the voice has maybe finished singing a sentence, you could maybe push the guitar sound up a little bit louder so he's featured in this place, or a saxophone or a sitar or whatever. Then when all the songs are put together, then I go away and I think which is the best running order, because I don't want to have, let's say, six songs all in the same key. What do you call it? The same shruti.
Yeah, same shruti.
Which is different, because over here when you have live performers in India, they often do each song in the same key.
Yes.
That used to drive my lovely music partner Tim Cross crazy. He said, how can they listen to everything in the same key? So I make sure that there's dynamics in the rhythm and the keys. Then I go back into the studios where I work with my great engineer, and we choose exactly the amount of time in between each song. Now, it may be a very unimportant thing for most people, but when you play an album all the way through, you just want to not have too long a gap before the next song starts. Or then also each song has to be the same level of volume. So this is called your mastering.
Mastering, yes.
Then when it's mastered and you've got what you call your P and Q information, and which is where it sort of says nowadays on these CD players, it'll actually digitally say what the name of the song is. Then you take it off to the printer and he prints it. But of course I've omitted to say one of the most complicated parts of making an album is actually the cover. The cover is a nightmare, in as much as it can take a long time, and it can't be started until I've actually done the running order. And the one man who does my artwork is my absolute dearest, beloved friend, Jörg Huber. So everyone will have seen that I have a very particular look.
Yeah, I was going to come to that. No, anyway, then you talked about it. So
well, yeah, I'm just looking at the booklet of Planet Love, and he really is an extraordinary artist. He's very famous in Vienna, from Austria, and he's done done all my album covers for the last 30 years, and he's phenomenal. And he just, you know, it's packaging. If you have a horrible cover, people aren't going to be that bothered to look at it. They've got to be intrigued enough to go, what can this music be like? So I'm happy to put my stuff into his hands, but it takes him a while. He doesn't just go in and go boom, boom, and it's done overnight. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I'm waiting till the last minute. I book the printing time, the pressing plant, everything, and I'm still waiting for the cover, and I'm standing over him with a whip saying, come on, come on, and, you know, hurry up. So he's the last person that has to listen to me saying, for goodness sake, get going. We're going to miss the printing time, because you book a time in the studios. And as you know, they're here at the at Cy Blossoms. They're putting out the Marta CD. Yeah. And there was a delay because of something wasn't right with the cover.
With the cover design, yes.
There's always the cover is the one that's the problem, actually. There is also, when you make a CD musically, you shouldn't really make a CD more than 72, maximum 74 minutes long, because it some quality gets lost, or you might find the last track will jump a bit. So all sorts of technical, I mean, it's not really that technical, but it's things to think about. And then when you've got the cover and the printed and it's gone to the man who just makes sure that the printing is right, then he wants to know the catalogue number. And I always have the same number, which is 108,
okay.
Because it's, you know, it's a very lucky number. But I'll change the letters before. So Planet Love is just called PL108.
Okay.
And then you have to have it shrink-wrapped so that the CD can't fall out. And then you have to put the barcode on it. And then that great moment when finally your baby is put into your hands and you've got the finished thing. And then for me, the best moment is when I can go out and give it to people. I sadly can't sell it, but I give it.
You know, all your CD cover designs have this design elements repeating in almost all the CDs, like these birds and there are these flowers. Does this have any significance?
Well, yes, the rose, of course, is the symbol of the heart, and it's very much a Sufi symbol too. It's, you know, Sai Baba himself has said that we have to be like a rose, you know, and as he gives us more and more of his teachings, our hearts respond and open up. I mean, he can't zap us with too much information. I don't think we'd be able to handle it. But slowly we can grow, and he nurtures us so that we open up like a rose. And in many, many religions, the rose is so incredibly important. Then sometimes Jörg will put on the hoopoe bird.
Okay.
I don't know if he has on this Planet Love cover. No, that's, strange enough, is a hummingbird.
Okay.
Well, maybe it's because I'm humming a bit. No, hoopoe is also significant as a symbol of, for Sufis, of the soul. And he, because he knows I love desert and camels and things, he puts a few camels on to make me happy.
Okay.
And always we might have the Om sign, but we'll have, you know, Allah in interesting forms. Very much this thing of all religions have to be featured.
Great. So probably it is time to play the next track in the CD, which is Heart of Hearts.
Yeah, Heart of Hearts, by the way, is a prayer. I thought I'd written my own prayer, and because I'm not very good at learning somebody else's prayer, especially not if it's not really in my language. So I thought I'd have a prayer, and I would just imagine every morning that Swami, his light, would shine through me, and I would work it through from the top of my head to the bottom of my feet, and then to open up my heart so that I can love all and serve all. And I was finished with this prayer, please swing in my heart forever, O Swami. And I thought this was my prayer, and I do it every morning for years. And then I happened to read a Sufi book, and an old Sufi from 1,000 years ago, he'd written practically the same prayer. Then I reread the Quran, and there's a section in there where it's almost the same. So in fact, what I thought was my original prayer is not original, it's from the Quran. So in the middle of it is a few sentences, which is two flowers, one fragrance, two lamps, one light, two lips, one word, two eyes, one sight. This is a few more sentences. They're sentences from Swami to remind us, though, although we may think we're two or more or many, in fact, we're all one. So that's what Heart of Hearts is all about.
Thank you.
on my right hand, a light on my left hand, a light before me, a light behind me, a light above me, a light below me. Oh, my beloved, be the light in my heart.
Be my ears so I may hear you. Be my eyes so that I may see. Oh, be in my soul my hidden treasure. Be my life as it ought to be. A light in my heart of hearts. 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 Be my feet with which you lead me. Be my hands in all that I do. Waves.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You just listened to the song Heart of Hearts by Diana Gillespie from her new album, Planet Love. Now, Diana, let's go straight to the next track because this is one of my favorite tracks, Guardian Blue Angel. I really like this song. I heard it, I think, a few years back. And from then on, this has been one of my favorite songs of all your albums. So
well, it's strange. This is one of those songs that I've got to say wrote itself.
Okay.
I'd started writing, you know, I wanted to sing about Sai Baba, but the problem is he wears orange, and orange is an impossible word to sing.
Okay.
It's absolutely not nice to sing the word orange. Not only that, it doesn't rhyme with anything. It's a known fact for songwriters. You cannot find one thing that rhymes with orange. So blue is the most perfect color, and I used to be tormented, you know, how can I explain blue? And then I thought, Krishna blue.
Okay.
That's how I explained it. And of course, I always introduce this song by saying that I know that everyone in their life has troubles, but somehow we get saved from our troubles, if we're saved, by our guardian. Well, I always considered Sai Baba as my guardian angel in the early days. I know now he's much more than that, but that's how I kind of called it. I thought about various other colors to describe it, but, you know, pink's unsuitable, red's too fiery, black's depressing, brown's too boring. You know, purple doesn't sound purple angel, it sounds ridiculous. So Guardian Blue Angel is how it came out. And in fact, I was really struggling with how to get the finishing touch of the chorus of this song. And then another of my songwriting partners, David Malin, he happened to come and visit me, and I said, I've got a stumbling block. And he heard it, and he immediately finished off the last few lines, which is why that song is a co-write. And it's originally from the album One to One, when I called myself Third Man. And I just thought I'd put it on the Planet Love album because it is a much requested song. And it's quite a gentle little thing.
Yes.
It's a love song. And I have sung it actually maybe twice, could be even three times for Swami through the years. So let's give it a listen.
Sure.
I
Welcome back, dear listeners. You just listened to the song Guardian Blue Angel by Diana Gillespie from her album Planet Love. Now, Diana, do you make plans for yourself?
Don't they always say that God laughs when we make plans? She's probably hooting with laughter right now. Yes, because I'm always making plans. I kind of know more or less where I am right up until about next September. I mean, certainly until next May, I can tell you nearly exactly which day of the week where I am, because blues musicians have to book quite far ahead, though I'm thankful I'm not an opera singer, because they book 3 years in advance. And imagine if you get a sore throat, you put the whole plans go up into the sky. But blues singers, even if you've got a cold, you can kind of get on and sing. I do make plans. And mercifully, it's very, very, very rare that I've had to change it. It's nearly never that I've cancelled a concert. Because, I mean, I'm not that overworked that I'm falling to pieces through exhaustion. And when I have free time from singing blues, then I'm going off to, you know, some of these other countries, which, you know, I know where I'm going to be next year, but I know full well that the good Lord could have me run over by a bullock cart tomorrow, and none of these plans will happen. But if you don't make plans, then you can't kind of plan accordingly. And I do have a blues band to think of, you know, while I'm going off doing sort of Sai Baba type of things in different countries. My band, they work with other musicians, but they're still kind of waiting for me back home. So I love going back to the London Blues Band. And maybe we should play a track from them anyway, or were you going to ask me something else? But it's just the next track is a blues song.
Sure.
The song is called Timeless. And it's really, you know, blues is very simple. It's never more than three chords, usually. And it's usually about 12 bars. And I thought I'd remind people that, that in fact Sai Baba's love is timeless. It goes on and on. It's just us in our bodies that are going to fall to pieces. Of course, the Atma, the soul, goes on and on. I put it into a blues, but I'm very much aware that probably the audience, if I'm singing about, you know, your love is timeless, they probably think I'm singing about some guy somewhere or other. But I know what I'm singing about, so that's okay. And
yeah,
the song is timeless, and the band playing with me is the London Blues Band.
Buy what I really need, and I won't be satisfied till my soul is free. To love you like I was born to do, oh, it feels like I'm coming home to you. Your love is timeless. Just goes on and on. This love will still be around when this body of mine is dead and gone. All the gold in the world won't pay the price to buy this paradise. Your love is timeless. It just goes on and on. This love will still be around when this body of mine is dead and strong. With a love like this, oh, you can't go wrong.
Welcome back, dear listeners. The track that you just listened to is titled Timeless, and it is from the album Planet Love by Dana Gillespie. So, Dana, you just said that you make plans for yourself.
Yes.
So, what are the future plans for Dana Gillespie as a blues musician and Dana Gillespie as the spiritual seeker?
Well, in the very near future, I shall be doing some blues concerts in Mumbai, which is nice. I always like doing blues in India. I've done lots of blues gigs here, and I've found that Indians really respond to blues because they love the spontaneity and the heart that goes into blues. But when those concerts are over, then it's Christmas in England, and I nowadays, you know, both my parents are dead, so Christmas doesn't really mean the same to me as it used to, for example, when my mother was alive. Even to the age of 85, she and I used to give each other a stocking presents, which is the English tradition. And she's no more. So I now escape to Italy, where I sit for 2 or 3 weeks with usually some old friends. And I'm afraid do nothing but become a couch potato, eat too much, think too much probably, sit and look at the view, listen to music, just talk to friends and have a good time. It's when I recharge my batteries, and also it's quite cold in Italy, so it means carrying lots of logs and putting it on the log fire. I mean, it's all very seasonal and everything. Then, of course, I go back to doing some blues concerts in January, and then it's off to Mustique to do the blues festival. Then I come back and I mix the Mustique album, and then I go straight to Europe and do some more concerts. And then I'm sort of in and out all over Europe the whole time. So these are my actual functioning plans. For spiritual plans, when I'm in London, if I have a Sunday off, I go to my local Sai Centre to listen to sing bhajans. I mean, I sing, we're all given a chance to sing one each, you know, okay, as it goes through. So I'll sing one there. And I've been doing this for so many years. It's the first bhajan centre that ever opened in England. It's in a place in London called Russell Square. And it's sort of slightly, I like the disorganisedness of it. It's not, they are doing seva and helping and everything, but I'm never a regular there every Sunday because I'm often travelling. But they're always happy to see me when I turn up, even if there's been a gap of 2-3 months. So I do that, and of course I'm an avid book reader, and I'm always reading books on Sufism or philosophy, and from these is where I glean my ideas for the next bit of songs. So just when I think I've finished a production and I'm not writing anything more, please, oh Lord, give me a break, some peace and quiet, then a sentence is going to jump out at me and I've got to reach for my pen and a pad, and then I start ticking over and another song comes out at me. So I'm never I can never say I'm free of things. I mean, a bit like this next song, Love is the Net, which we'll play in a minute. It's a sentence that Sai Baba said, love is the net in which all hearts are caught. And I thought, this is a really beautiful sentence. I must steal that yet again, stealing another of his sentences and put it into a song. And so this is a new one that nobody's heard. It's not from any other old album. And it's called Love is the Net.
Love is the net in which your
Welcome back, dear listeners. Well, Dana, most of your songs probably fall under the genre of world music. It has all kinds of instruments, violins to sitar to congos to drums, bass guitar, everything.
And rock, blues,
and rock,
guitar.
Blues, everything, yes. So when did this synthesis of Western music and Indian music begin in your career?
Well, I think I always had an interest in this, in Indian music, because as I grew up in the early 60s listening to music, I can remember going in 1964, maybe it was, with Jimmy Page, who then founded a very famous group called Led Zeppelin, and we used to go off and see Ustad Vilayat Khan, Ravi Shankar, which was a rare thing in the early 60s, but, you know, one, and Alaraka on tablas, what a fabulous musician he was. And I was very impressed with him because he's one of those musicians that used to roar with laughter when he was performing. He actually looked like he was enjoying himself. And his son, Zakir Hussain, does the same kind of style. I come from the school of thought that if you go to a concert, it's far better to be entertained. You don't want to see musicians sitting there like blocks of stone looking far too serious. You're there to entertain and make people feel good and uplifted. So from the early 60s, I was already interested in Indian music, but I didn't know, obviously in those days, know about bhajans. But also, you know, flower power, you're too young to know what even that is. But in the 60s, there was a whole new movement of people thought they were kind of changing the world through love and flowers and peace and love, which maybe sounds corny now, but I remember at the time we all passionately believed in it, and I would be making brown rice and vegetables for all my hippie friends because that's what one did in the 60s. I think maybe a little of that idealism is a bit lost. So I always had an interest in this kind of music. And then I got very interested in it, obviously, when I first came to see Sai Baba, because I was exposed to bhajans, and I was very concerned that this style of music was not going beyond Sai Baba devotees. It's all very well if you know about him, then you already know what this kind of music is. But if you don't know about him, I wanted to take this music beyond, and that's why all of them, except for one, which is the Mata Mata, the new one, CD, I never have put his picture on the cover because I've wanted his music to go to people that don't know about Indian music and don't know about him, to make it kind of the music more groovy, trancey, more hip, more in touch with young people, I should say. You know, young people have all got the latest techno equipment, and they're not going to be content with just some singing and a harmonium and some tablas. They want some fabulous grooving sounds. Yes. So I've tried to, this has been my kind of big passion, and the more I've tried to do this, I mean, I've worked with fantastic Indian musicians like Mandolin Srinivas has played, and also a fabulous Indian violinist called Chandru, who has studios here in Bangalore. I've done a couple of productions in his studios, and I've always loved Arab music. I mean, I think in my past I've definitely lived in the desert because I'm very drawn to all things Sufi and all anything to do with Arab. So this has just always been a passion of mine. And the fact that one can marry the two together, I'm still not through with the marrying. There's even more marrying. I would like to do concerts where I can do blues and bhajans together. But the problem is my blues musicians don't really do bhajans, and bhajan musicians don't really do blues. I need to be so famous that I can afford to bring two lots of bands with me, and then we can all work together in the last section of the concert. It hasn't happened yet, but it's sort of beginning. It's sort of starting to happen. And the variety of instruments that are around is phenomenal. And I work with the English musicians, and they're ones that are experimental enough. You know, the average musician I work with has usually got about 30 or 40 instruments sitting in his home. You know, if I'm traveling somewhere like Russia, I'll come back with a balalaika. If I'm in Turkey, I'll come back with an oud or some instrument. I'll give them all to my guitarist so he can start collecting, because I'm not actually be playing them myself. And I've always picking up, you know, some kind of drums in different countries. So usually this is, I like to mix the two together, because one of these days we're all going to be recognized as being one now. And I mean, it's obviously it's happening quite a bit with the viral computer, where anything you do is seen on the other side of the planet instantly, but it will make an effect musically as well. So I want to be right up there taking down barriers and hopefully widening horizons musically.
Great. So that brings us to the next track, because this is one of the most powerful tracks I've heard from your albums. There is only one?
Yeah, there is only, well, it's, everyone knows it as Om Shakti, but actually it's called There Is Only One, because when I first came here to Puttaparthi, in the old days when one would sit and eat in the South Indian canteen, meant to be eating in silence, not always followed, but the one thing that struck me was there were always these sentences written up on the walls. There is only one religion, the religion of love, and there's only one language, the language of the heart. And I took these two sentences because they're so important. Now, I know that everywhere you can see there is only one caste, the caste of humanity. Yeah. But for an English person, the word caste is not a particularly nice word.
It doesn't make much sense.
No, it doesn't mean anything, actually. Yeah. And in fact, I'd rather we didn't have caste.
Okay.
It didn't exist. So I chose not to use that sentence. And the words really are just to remind us that we are all one. And I've got, again, I'm just looking at the list of who was playing. I've got Pandit Dinesh doing the percussion. But I've also got a didgeridoo, which is that wonderful Australian instrument. And it's played by a very, very famous musician and artist in England called Rolf Harris.
Is it the long tubular instrument?
Is that long tube thing that the Aborigines play? And you need to do a certain kind of thing called circular breathing.
Okay.
You breathe in through your nose and keep blowing. You can go for an hour, you can go for a day if you can actually do it. That's how you take your breath. It's really difficult. I can't do it. I've tried. And Rolf Harris plays a thing called the Jew's harp, which is a little thing that you have to be careful you don't break your teeth on. It goes doing, 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 and you play it with your mouth. And he plays a thing called the wobble board. He's a fantastic musician and always underestimated by most people, who think he's a sort of cartoonist and a funny man, but he's a great musician. And so, and he does a thing called, he calls it eefing. He uses vocal effects. And so this is very much in evidence on this track. And I think I've sung it for Sai Baba maybe two, perhaps even three times through the years, and it's always requested, and it goes down really well at the concerts, no matter which country I'm in. So let's play There Is Only One, Om Shakti.
Below and above.
Welcome back, dear listeners. In the studios with me is British songwriter and singer Dana Gillespie, and today we are playing songs from her new album, Planet Love. Well, Dana, at 2-3 occasions, when we recorded the first part and even today, we spoke about the musical tours that you do to different parts of the world. So let us talk a bit about the love that you experience at this different
countries.
Well,
I'm traveling. Well, one thing is for sure, no matter how far away I go or no matter how many different countries I go to, the love is the same, actually. I mean, it comes in different forms. But I'm so touched and moved by what I see that I really do believe that if people could see what I've seen in my life, they wouldn't ever question that there's any difference between any of us. We may be different colours, or somebody's fat or thin, or rich or poor, but we really are all the same, which is why I keep going back to this mention of unifying, unification. Yeah. Unity is divinity, is one of Sai Baba's sentences.
We are all the one under the sun.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so important, but I mean, it's pretty amazing when you're in a town, let's say in Siberia, which has got a name that in my case it's usually unpronounceable, and they come out and they able to sing along to the words. They may not always understand it because obviously English is not their language, but they all of them know how to sing bhajans. In fact, they put me to shame with how they've learnt the bhajans. What is quite nice is they do tell me, no matter where I go, but these countries that don't really speak English, they always say to me that they all learn their bhajans from my CDs more than from Indian CDs.
Connect to the kind of music better?
Well, I think they can connect because I make the bhajans a little simpler. I always like to say I iron out a lot of the wiggly notes, which aren't really necessary to get to the essence of the song. If you're singing, you really just want to be able to sing the melody. I know there's fabulous singers here in Puttaparthi, and they can wiggle to their heart's delight with their notes. But actually, if you're sitting, whether it's Germany or Kyrgyzstan, they're not usually that proficient in the Indian style. So I simplify things so that people can learn it. And when people tell me that they prefer to listen to my albums to learn, I don't say that they don't listen to Indian singers for other reasons of pleasure. But when they say to learn, actually it's a great buzz, and it doesn't matter where I go in the world. I love hearing that because it means basically what I would say, job done, mission accomplished. Mm-hmm. I've made these albums not for me to sit at home and listen to, but for other people to, you know, actually get some pleasure out of it and learn at the same time. And I'm always saying to the groups all over the world that Sai Baba himself always said, and more frequently towards the end of his physical life, he always said the importance of singing bhajans. Never should be underestimated because, for this, let's say you do it once a week for an hour, at least in this 1 hour, you are in a nice kind of bubble of Sanskrit words and good melodies. The telephone's not ringing. You're not thinking, hopefully, about, outside worldly problems. And you reach a kind of a different state, just even if it only lasts for an hour, that's good. I know here I am talking about bhajans, and we've actually been going through the Planet Love album, which doesn't have a bhajan on it. But I do always go back to the bhajans because this is probably what, when I travel the world, what the people know better. But they want to hear the words in English too. So sometimes there's one song on the Sacred Space album, which is Guru Nanak Ji Jai Jajaka. I finish that song by putting in an English sentence, whoever quotes the name of God reaches the final goal of liberation, peace unto you 1,000 times, peace and salutations, which is the translation. I don't usually do translation, but I actually like mixing the two because actually I go to so many different speaking countries that not everyone's going to be English speaking and not everyone's going to be understanding bhajans, but you'd be amazed how much the countries that don't speak English, how well they've learnt their bhajans all over the world. But I'm often doing concerts in these countries, not blues, where I'm not able to really talk about a specific thing like, well, for example, Sai Baba, I might be in a country where it's best not to mention any name, just the message of love, which is the most important thing. And it's a joy to know that people are picking up on this love vibration. I know it sounds corny, but I know because I've experienced it that it exists. So if something that exists is corny, then bring it on, because it's really good. People feel good. The music is meant to uplift souls, and so I know it does. And on that note, we could end the program, or if you're feeling strong and bold and you can edit this out or not, we could go to the last song on the album. It's called Move Your Body Close to Me, and I've got to say that when I have sung it for Sai Baba, a few people said, I don't think you could sing the word body, not here in the ashram. You know, the ashram has very correct rules, and one should adhere to them because we are in a hallowed, holy territory. But of all the thousands and thousands of people who would sit and watch Sai Baba when he would walk out or come out in the later years in his wheelchair, they were all desperately wanting his physical body to go close to them. So this song was written, actually, I was yearning for, I didn't quite know what form I was yearning for. I didn't know what form existed, actually. I just knew that I wanted some form that would change, transform my life. And this song was written because I had been inspired from an Indian melody. And of all songs I have written, it is the most requested song. So I was in agony before I was about to go and sing it. I'd been practicing every day with Sai Baba's students. Not one of them had had any doubts about the consistency or of the lyrics. You know, they absolutely were fine with this. But 5 minutes before I was about to step outside into the Saikalwant halls to sing, two people quite respected here on the ashram came and said, I don't think you should say the word body here. And I'm thinking, well, I felt awful, actually. So what I did was I stood at the back of the, inside the mandir, and there's a statue of Krishna is in the front of the chariot with Arjuna, and he's guiding the chariot, and I'm saying to Krishna, saying, you protected Draupadi when she was about to lose her honor with the sari, and you made the sari elongated. Anyone Indian will know what on earth I'm talking about. I was saying, please, O Lord, please protect my honor. I don't want to sing something if you don't want me to sing it. So I decided to ask him just before the concert if I should do it or not. And, of course, he said, no, you do it.
Oh, you asked for Swami physically before you started singing?
Yeah, of course I did. Okay. I wasn't going to put myself in more hot water. So I asked him, and he said, yes, you do it. And I think that Sai Baba wants to broaden everyone's horizons to realize that there is a whole world outside of just Puttaparthi, and music can come from anywhere as long as it uplifts. It's the same thing that I know, as I said before, everyone probably hated me when I sang at the 70th birthday because I did blues.
Oh, yeah. Okay, the first concert.
Yeah,
yes.
And they'd never heard, you know, a blues guitar. They'd never had... To find a drum kit in Puttaparthi was practically an impossibility, and they'd never heard...
If I was there, I would have loved the concert.
Well, yeah, but I've met many students who had been students, and they hated it. But they said, we have grown to love what you do, because we just didn't know. You know, they didn't know. And so the thing with Move Your Body Close to Me is... we cannot pretend that we don't have bodies. We are born in a body. This is the body that our dear beloved Sai Baba has given us. And we wanted him to move his body towards us. So it seemed okay for me to sing it. Okay, well, you've been listening to me, Dana Gillespie, for the last two sessions. I'm sitting here with Chandu, and we've been just playing tracks through from the Planet Love album. And I must say, Chandu, thank you so much for inviting me here to the studios. It's been a joy, and I love Global Harmony. I think it's a great radio station, and I'm happy that you have been bold enough to play some music that's not just bhajans, because the message has to go further. Don't you agree?
Yep, I agree. So, dear listeners, that brings us to the end of this conversation with British British songwriter and singer.
Yes, don't you dare say actress, otherwise I'll pull the plug off in the studios. We've had fun here, and I hope that listeners, you have too, because music is meant to uplift the soul, and let's hope that these last two programs have made you feel a little bit better. From us all here, Chandu and I in the studios, we want to say Sai Ram and goodbye.
Thank you, Dana. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chandu.
Move your body close to me. Move your body close to me. Touch heart to heart, don't ever part. Oh, give in. Move your body close to me. Move your body close to me. Reach out to feel that it's for real. Oh, give in. Move your body close to me. Close to me.